Hey folks, you're listening to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, episode 46 with my special guest, spokesperson for the National Police Association, Sergeant Betsy Smith.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you I'm excited that the Get Balanced Podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit firstnet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, and my special guest today is Sergeant Betsy Smith, and retired Sergeant Betsy Smith, and also the spokesperson for the National Police Association. Welcome to the show, Betsy.
Thank you so much for having me. I sure appreciate it, Donnie.
You're quite welcome, and you are a familiar face. Now, this is generally just on podcasts, but if it ever goes out on YouTube, you are a familiar face because I see you on the news quite a bit, actually. So if you would, tell us a little bit about your background, all the way of how does it lead up to seeing you in the morning sometimes?
Really early in the morning sometimes. So I'll tell you, I grew up in Northern Illinois, and I became a police dispatcher at age 17. And I continued being a dispatcher throughout college. And at age 21, I became a police officer in one of the largest suburbs in Chicago. And I had a terrific 29-year career there. I had so many great opportunities. And I retired in 2009 as a sergeant. I had kind of a parallel career as I was a police officer. In video training and then national level training. And I had a bit of a talent for dealing well with the media, and I'm an author and all that. About a year ago, the National Police Association approached me and said, "Hey, would you like to represent us in the media?" And I the National Police Association, I so appreciate their mission. It's an organization that supports law enforcement with, they have a legal arm, and then they also have an informational educational arm where they help people understand how they can best support law enforcement. And boy, do we need that right now, right?
We certainly do.
So they send me out there, and I go on lots of television and talk to lots of print media about some of the issues that we have these days concerning law enforcement. It's a terrific organization, and it's a terrific job. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. And you've been doing a great job representing the organization, because I watch you in the morning. So you really do a great job. And Sergeant, What I would like to do is give you, because you know, all my listeners know that this is the Get Balanced podcast and we're talking about work-life balance. But what I want to do is that we've never met before. This is the first time we've talked live. You know, I had some emails back and forth with you, but I want to give you a little, I call it the Reader's Digest version of my work-life balance theory and all of that. So I finished my research. I got my PhD just a couple years ago. And I did a research. My research on this was, I actually looked at self-care, like how well are we taking care of our physical selves, our mental health, our social, and our spiritual, like those four buckets, if you will. And then how did that relate to work-life balance? So in other words, what I did is I went out, and it took me a while to find five people that were married, that had children at home, that were executives in organizations, you know, leadership roles, that were managing their self-care very, very well because they had to pass certain assessments of mine. And then they were very, though, effective in their careers, but then very effective and happy family life and all that. You know, because I was thinking, is it a myth that you have to choose between success at work or home? You know, because a lot of times we're brought up in this culture that we live in that, hey, choose one, you can't have both, you know, and I was sort of setting out to see, is that really true? You know what? And it wasn't, because what ended up coming out of this study, Betsy, was that the more or the greater people actually took care of themselves, their physical, again, psychological, social, spiritual, the better they could serve and perform at work and at home. And in the profession of law enforcement, as well as firefighters and EMT, public servants, right? All take the oath to serve and protect the community. Yet sometimes I believe all of you sometimes fail to recognize that you and your families are also a part of that community that you took an oath to serve and protect. And I want to get your reaction to that, especially with, you know, when we know about, you know, the struggles of all first responders out there, but you speaking specifically for law enforcement, about what do you think about when I say what work-life balance is for me and what I teach is it's about aligning your day-to-day behaviors with your priorities in life. And it's not about, oh, you spend 8 hours on this shift and 8 hours at home and 8 hours doing whatever, sleeping, right? It's not about any of that. It's about what are your priorities in life? And then do a self-assessment, essentially. Are your behaviors in alignment with it, right? And what I tell people is I'm not out to tell you what your priorities ought to be, but I'll tell you what people say when they are at the end of their careers and they look back and they say, you know what, two principles sort of stand the test of time, I would say, is health and close personal family relationships. Let me get your reaction to that. What do you think?
Well, you just unleashed a whole fury of thoughts in my head with that, both from a personal standpoint and from a national level training standpoint. That's one of the things that I always say to my men and women that I'm talking to is nobody's going to put on your tombstone, boy, he sure worked a lot of overtime. What a great guy. And, you know, what you're going to think about toward the end is, you know, what were my family relationships, my friends? What was my belief system? That's so huge. You know, I look back first on my own life growing up. I'm a boomer, you know, I'm a kid of the 60s and 70s. And I had I had married parents. I had a mom who was a school teacher. I watched her battle cancer a couple of times in her life, well, when I was very young. And then when I was an adult, I watched her, you know, put in so much time into her teaching. She had the equivalent of two master's degrees she got over the year with her continuing education. And yet she was a very present parent. She was very involved in her church in volunteer activities in her community outside of her work as a school teacher. And so that was when, you know, in the 60s and 70s, we were having that debate, can women have it all? Yeah. And then as an adult, I became a police officer in 1980. I waited until I had made sergeant and was 35 years old and had finished my education before I became a parent, because I wanted to be able to give 100% as a working cop, but also as a mom. So I waited. I did a lot of things. I did a lot of traveling, did, you know, some of the things that I wanted to do work-wise before I became a parent. After I became a parent, I took an assignment in crime prevention that I loved, but it was off the street. Mostly it was, I had a little more control over my schedule and I could actually take my daughter to some of the meetings and things I had to go to. Yeah. And then I worked really hard to get on our lieutenant's promotional list. And then I turned it down because it would have meant a schedule and an assignment that would have made me not a very good parent. I also retired a year earlier than I probably should have, again, because I was working full time as a police officer and full time as a national level trainer, and something had to give. So I understand that whole work-life balance. And it's not just difficult for women. It's difficult for men. And now the newer generations of men are just as involved as women in the raising of children and families and things like that. How do you achieve work-life balance? You know, that's a very dicey issue. But for me personally, my faith is what drives all of that. I'm an unabashed Christian. And our faith tells us that family's got to be priority, relationships have to be a priority, mm-hmm. God has to be a priority. And that's something, boy, I work at every single day. And I see with my students and with the police officers I talk to all over the country, it's an issue for them as well. And I think in first responder service, both police and fire, EMS, dispatch, I think we're doing a better job now of, you know, when I became a police officer in the 80s, it was, you had to be all in for the police department. And we had such a high divorce rate, all of that. I think we're doing a better job now of balancing work and family, but you also have to think about, and we can talk about this, health. Yeah. Because that if you're especially after you retire, I can tell you, if you don't have your health, it's not going to be much fun.
Yeah. Now, and health is such a huge component to where one of the models that came out of my study was essentially it calls for our health is pretty much a prerequisite to a balanced life. Because and we know from law enforcement side as well as firefighting side, the length of time after retirement is not that lengthy, the average length. And it's because of it comes down to health, right? It does. And sometimes too, a little bit of that lost identity, you know, it was interesting to hear you talk about full-time sergeant looking to get the lieutenant, but then you looked at your other identity in life, right? And you chose that. What went through you? Imagine there are people listening to the podcast that women, moms, that are struggling. I just had some in a workshop. I was in Arizona this week. I just got back. I'm in Dayton, Ohio now where I live. I'll be back there next week too. But I was just in a workshop to where we were talking about, and it was with law enforcement, a mom, two children, small, but she works, and she's a sergeant too, but she works a 12-hour, two 12s, two 8s, divorced, split parent. So when she gets off that 12-hour shift, she's picking up children at 6 a.m. She's going basically about 35 to 38 hours without sleeping every single 12-hour shift.
Yeah. That, I mean, and that is so difficult. And that lack of sleep, when you're not getting sleep, likely you're probably not getting exercise. You're probably not eating right because you're craving right. carbs and caffeine and fat. Yeah. So that all starts to snowball into a really unhealthy lifestyle. The last 6 years of my career, I worked 12-hour shifts, and that's a very, it's great. Because you have half the year off when you look at a calendar year. But you really don't, because you're going to court, you're working overtime. I was also teaching full time when I was on the 12s. And when I was teaching, I was getting on an airplane to go teach, and I would be gone for 2 days, come home, take a little nap maybe, and go to work. So it's really, those 12-hour shifts they're a blessing and a curse. And I will say, especially for a single mom, I was a single mom for a while as well. It was very difficult. I was blessed because I had friends who helped me out as a single mom, and then I married a guy who was just the best dad and stepdad, and he's well known to law enforcement, Dave Smith. We all know him as JD Buck Savage.
I watched some videos.
But
it gave me my morning laugh.
Right. He's, you know, and he's just an amazing dad. He would do a lot of the cooking, but he also traveled for a living. And we were really fortunate. We still had kids at home. I had my best friend happened to live next door and would take care of my kid and my dogs. And probably the worst thing that happens when you're a single mom like that is the guilt really gets to you. And I would get home at 6 or 7 at night, and my, you know, 8 or 9 year old would read me to sleep. She would read me a book and tuck me in. And that's how we would spend some time together. And she's, you know, now she's in her 20s, and I've talked to her about how did that affect you? And I want to say to all the single moms out there, single parents who feel guilty and who are working these long shifts as a first responder, and talking to my daughter, you know, she says, you know what? I knew you loved me. You stayed in touch even when you were gone. And she said, I take a great deal of pride in what you did for a living and continue to do. So, you know, kids just need to know that you love them. And they want you to come home safe. And that's another thing too, for a first responder parent, especially as a single parent. And my husband and I, we had some opportunities, you know, to go to Iraq or Afghanistan, you know, as a couple, during the first phase of the Afghanistan and then the Iraq war. And we said, you know what, that's a lot of money and it looks like a lot of fun, but we got kids. So you do make sacrifices for your kids. So what I would say is make sure you're telling your kids, you know, let them know that, hey, this is what mommy is doing for a living. This is what daddy's doing for a living. Be open with them and let them take pride in what it is you do for a living. We call it warrior families. Let them know they're part of that warrior family you know, make sure that they understand that they are the priority, but you're also a community member who's got to go out and help the community.
Yes. And, you know, speaking of warrior families, you know, I have not been a first responder, but I was 6 years in the Army National Guard. My son followed me. Well, didn't actually follow me. He went ahead of me. He went to the 82nd Airborne full time. Awesome. Did a tour of 9 months in Afghanistan. One of my daughters that just graduated high school is going full time Army ROTC scholarship. So she's a national scholarship, which super proud of her. And so it's like, it's part of that warrior family. But in today's, like what you are talking about in media, taking pride, and I am proud. I'm proud of the military. I'm proud of the Blue. I'm proud of the firefighters. You know, I take a lot of pride in that. And there's a lot of, and I think we all need to, I'm actually working on an initiative to where building more pride around that, to where people from the outside, we need a vehicle to let especially law enforcement know that we're proud of you, we honor you, we love you, you know, we've got your back. We will be those citizens. If you get in trouble, we're not out there with an iPhone. We're there to help. We will get involved. And I think there should be, and there can be, a movement of that. But if you would talk a little bit, because I know there are many, many officers that they have that mental, it's a mental and emotional challenge, as well as for their families and their children right now, of what they hear in the media. What advice would you have for them?
Well, there's something we call vicarious traumatization that occurs to our families with all the negative media, you know, whether it's a specific officer involved shooting, you know, mm-hmm. where mom or dad had to kill a bad guy and now there are pictures all over the news and things like that, or just a more broad element to it that the police are murderers and we're racist and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's also a fear involved there that, you know, mom and dad aren't going to come home right. in the law enforcement profession. And so, yeah, there's lots of great initiatives, Back the Blue initiatives, if you will, that a lot of law enforcement officers are getting their families involved in so that they can see the support. Because when you look at the polls that are out there, all the national level polls, there was just not even a month ago, I think it was a Marist poll. I'm not sure. One of the big polling organizations came out with a poll and American law enforcement came out more popular than the president of the United States and Major League Baseball. so, you know, there's still this 60 to 90% of the people out there, depending on the poll, appreciate and admire American law enforcement. They don't want us defunded. And in fact, there's a new initiative out there. It's nationally, where instead of defunding the police, people are demanding that the police be defended, because, you know, we're seeing rising murder rates in almost every large urban city in the country. I mean, out of control, you know, murders in Los Angeles County are up 90%. I would call that a crisis. You can look at my native Chicago to look at just the vast, the constant 40, 50, 60 shootings a weekend. And so people are seeing that. So, you know, we have an initiative, you know, one of the things you said reminded me that we have an initiative with the National Police Association, and you can go to our YouTube page and we have some PSAs on there, and we have a PSA that encourages people that if a law enforcement officer needs help, if you can safely step in and help that law enforcement officer, like we just saw some citizens do in San Francisco. We had a female officer attacked, you know, viciously by a violent homeless guy, and citizens actually stepped in to help her. And we encourage that if you can do it safely, instead of standing there and filming it, you know, and I've had citizens do this for me when I was on the job. I was fighting with a guy. I had an off-duty DEA agent who was out for a jog, jumped in to help me out. And, you know, so that's the thing. And I also want to encourage people, just when you see a law enforcement officer, you know, at a restaurant, go up and just thank them for what they do. When you see them drive by, wave and smile at them.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how much that means to people, to cops out there who just, we've talked to my husband and I both, to so many cops out there lately that are just kind of really beat up and demoralized, especially cops in these urban areas like Seattle and Portland, Chicago and New York. Yeah. You know, they come home so frustrated. They need to know how much they are appreciated. And then they need to share that with their families. And I would say to first responders, when you go home, boy, you may even have to fake your positivity, especially to your kids, especially to your young kids. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to them about the positives of the job and the good things that you do every day at work, because you do really amazing things every day at work. And that might seem everyday stuff to us, but it means so much to the person that we're helping with that burglary report or that homeless guy that we're buying a cup of coffee for, or that runaway that we're bringing home, whatever it is. Our children and our family members need to know about that. They need to hear about it. We first responders tend to, especially cops, tend to downplay our own heroics, if you will. And we're like, yeah, oh, that's no big deal. No, we need to talk about it. And we also need to support each other. I have a chemotherapy friend who he and I, when we get the opportunity, we always sit together. He's a fire captain. I'm a retired police sergeant, and he always wears fire stuff. I wear cop stuff when I go, and we tease each other, but we support each other. And yeah, I want first responders to think about that. You know, I want the cops to go up and take a plate of cookies up to the dispatchers, and I want the dispatchers to take, you know, a box of donuts over to the fire station. And I want to remind those firefighters, I would have starved to death in my first 2 years as a rookie cop if it wasn't for the firefighters generously feeding this broke cop, you know, when I was trying to pay off my student loans. That support of first responders is something that we must never lose sight of as well.
I completely agree with you. There's only one thing I have to disagree with you on my show, Betsy. We need to bring over a healthy snack to that fire station, not the box of donuts.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I'm the low carb girl, so I actually don't, unfortunately, get to eat donuts or cookies or any of that. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, let's talk a bit, and I appreciate all that. And I love the idea of focus on the positive, you know, the good things that you do at work, and start sharing that message. And I love that. Because that, it's not human nature to focus on the positive things usually. You know, it's definitely not the news cycle. Everything's bad. And one of the things I talk about, one little slide I have in my half day workshops that I do for first responders, is that I have this slide up. It says, how often do you dissect your successes in life? We don't. You know, generally, we do not. Hey, pick apart and learn, how are we doing something so well? You know, and I share with them, I'm like, why not? You know, as a culture, we're always ingrained to, where'd you screw up? How can you fix it and improve it and so forth? Versus, where are you doing things right in life? And pick it apart, and maybe that'll bleed over into other areas of your life that you could learn from, you know? And, but I love that though, focus on the positive, because it's a habit that we need to start doing, I think.
See, and that's a great word for it, is it's got to be a habit. That's one of the things we talk about. Dr. Kevin Gilmartin talks about this too in his book, in Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement, that we've got to examine our own self-talk. You know, how do you talk to yourself? What do you say? You know, and a lot of times when we do something great, like you said, you know, we don't talk about it, or we downplay it. Or do we say, oh, well, I was just lucky. You know, and no, we've got to, like you said, dissect your successes, celebrate them. Mm-hmm. And there's a terrific little video on YouTube. I always tell people, play a roll call. It's nothing to do with police work. And it's called Jessica's Daily Affirmation. And it's a little girl who stands in front of the mirror and just sort of celebrates everything around her. And it's just, I encourage everybody to look at that. You know, play it, or a roll call, play it in the fire station. But I want everybody to think about, how do you respond when you do something well, when you do something great? Don't just say, I was just lucky, or whatever, it was nothing. Say, wow, that was great. Yeah, I did something really amazing. And then, like you said, dissect it. How did I make that happen? And what can I do to continue that success?
Yeah. You mentioned Dr. Gilmartin. I know, he's a great guy. And self-talk. You've probably heard of this little analogy, or whatever, if that's a proper word. But just for the folks out there, it's that self-talk, right? And there's this old proverb that talks about, it's like this boy goes up to the senior person and says, hey, I feel like I have two wolves in my mind, a good wolf and a bad wolf, you know, fighting with each other. And looks at the elder and says, which one's going to win? And the elder looks at the young boy and says, the one you feed.
Yep, absolutely.
Because we got to make it a habit. We got to feed that positive talk and practice it and make it work just like a muscle, so that when we wake up in the morning, like you talked about Jessica's daily affirmation, right? What are we thankful for? What are we grateful for in the mornings? And especially, and then, if you're have of faith and you use prayer and praying in the morning and things like that, or evening or throughout the day, I know that's something that many people do to try to keep that positive piece going. Yeah. But let me switch gears with you for a little bit, Betsy, and go back to health and from your career in law enforcement and then your second career. And because I know you've written hundreds of articles, television shows. I mean, you've done a tremendous amount of work. How has your focus on health, you know, from that self-care component, physical and mental and spiritual, social health, how did that play for you through your career?
I'll tell you, I as a woman in 1980, and I'm not very big, I'm 5'5". And the fitness standards had just started to change to where somebody who was 5'5 could even be a police officer in the Chicago metro area. So I went into the police academy in great shape. And fortunately, I was one of those people who loved fitness, loved to run, you know, all that. But when I was still in field training, I got run over by a car standing inside of a convenience store. A young girl hit the wrong pedal. She was learning how to drive. She literally drove into the front of the store, hit the little cop there that was standing there. So this is in 1981. And in 1981, sports medicine wasn't really a thing. Yeah. So they took me to the hospital and I was, you know, pretty tore up, obviously. And the doctor there said, oh, kid, you know, why don't you just go ahead and retire, take the pension, go find something else to do for a living. You probably don't really want to be a cop anyway. I thought that's all I really ever wanted to be. So I had to go to the library and do research because there's no internet. And I actually found a sports medicine physician who had done a lot of work with the Chicago Bears and the Blackhawks and all our sports teams in Chicago. And I went to him and he said, oh, sure, I can fix you up. So multiple surgeries later, I was able to go back to full duty, go back to running 10 miles a day, get on the bike patrol, be able to do all those things. So I made a decision, in my very early 20s that fitness was going to be a big part of my life because it was what was going to keep me employed. Quite frankly, it was going to keep me going. So, fast forward through that whole police career, that's something that was the big priority. And my agency made it a pretty big priority. You know, we had some struggles with the fire service does a much better job of national fitness standards than law enforcement does. Mm-hmm. That's something law enforcement still struggles with, fitness standards and things like that. So as a police officer, you kind of have to make fitness an individual priority. And so I did. And I think that helped me work two full-time jobs, have the stamina to be a good parent. And then in retirement, that's something that's been a huge priority for my husband and I, during the pandemic when we're all sort of locked in our houses. Unfortunately, I was here in Southern Arizona. And we spent a lot of time on our mountain bikes because our gym was closed. Yeah. And so during the pandemic, about 8-9 months ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I'd spent my whole life trying to be healthy and fit and all that. But my oncologist is she's a super fit woman, big CrossFitter and stuff. And she was like, your lifestyle of fitness is really going to help you beat this thing. And she was right. And, so I continue, if this does go out on video, everybody can see my little cute little bald head under my warrior hat here. Yeah. And I'm all done with chemotherapy. And I just rode 17 miles yesterday on my mountain bike. I'm getting my fitness back. And a lot of it is because, of living a healthy lifestyle, which includes not just fitness, but nutrition. So that's been a huge part of my life, literally my entire adult life. And now, as I'm in my 60s and beating cancer, I can tell you it's paid off. So if you're listening to this and you're 25 or 30 years old and you're not in the kind of shape you were when you were 19, get back in shape, because it's going to prolong your life, especially as a first responder. Like you said, we tend to not live as long as other retired people when we retire. And a lot of that is because we have a lot, especially men, have a lot of health, heart issues. Mm-hmm. Because men die of heart attacks, women die of heart disease, different situation. As we get older, and we're not doing that high sensation, high stress job anymore, we've got to find other things to take the place of that. And fitness and nutrition, a big focus on that, is a great way to prolong your retirement. You know, for my retirees out there, first responder retirees, think about how you want to get every single one of those pension checks you can. Make them pay for a long time.
That's right.
And the only way you're going to do that is through health and fitness and nutrition.
That's right. Well, we are all glad to hear that you're beating it and the chemo went well and everything like that. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a little bit about that. Is that, because one of the things that I know is stressed, I always generally ask it in my workshops, how many of you get your annual, preventive checkups, thorough checkups? And honestly, I'm surprised. Not many hands go up.
Yes.
And now on the fire service side, they have to, in most departments, they're required because of the toxins that they're exposed to in the fires. But in law enforcement, I'm surprised not many, but was it caught in one of your preventive checkups, or did you notice something and you a lot of people, as we know, I mean, they notice things and they just brush it off and,
Right.
Which
no,
time
I mean,
is
I,
not on your side when you brush things off.
Yeah, when you say that, it reminds me, I look back, my agency, this was several decades ago, they started an initiative where every single police officer and firefighter in our community could get a free annual physical. And I mean, these were thorough physicals. Almost every firefighter took advantage of it. Probably 25% of the cops took advantage of it. And it was so frustrating, because we would try to do everything we could to talk people into that, I would encourage everybody. And this is a thing now that I'm retired, and I know it's a pain in the rear end to schedule all those different annual things that you have to do after you are past 50. But my cancer was caught by just an annual mammogram that was actually delayed 6 months by COVID. And, but I've been getting annual mammograms because I have a family history since I was 30 years old. And I've never, ever wavered from that. So when I got that phone call, because they just call you and say, hey, is this Betsy Smith? Yep. Okay. This is Dr. So-and-so. You have cancer. We'll call you. And it's very, it's not like on TV. So I was at first kind of frustrated because I thought, wow, did we catch this too late? because of COVID. And then actually I found out later, my oncologist said, actually, we might not have caught it had I had that mammogram earlier. We might have had to go a whole nother year. But yes, those annual, and believe me, for the women out there, they know a mammogram is not fun. Just like for guys, that prostate exam and all that, not fun, not even fun to talk about. But those are the kinds of things that we have to do. And I want everyone to know that the treatments for so many of the diseases that might befall any of us after retirement or even while you're still on the job, the treatments are amazing. Oh, yeah. You know, the treatments that I have had give me right now a 94% chance of just full remission forever. That's extraordinary. I have two types of cancer. And the treatments out there are just so well done. And the medical profession has come so far when it comes to all these, different diseases that befall us. You know, when I talk to my fellow retirees, we all laugh about all the maladies that we all have. And like you said, you know, because we have been all exposed to different things, a lot of us also in, as first responders, retired, especially, or on the job, you know, you have joint issues, arthritis, things like that. My husband and I laugh, you know, we each have a new knee. He's got a new hip. He's got to get his shoulder done. I've got to do this. You know, we're busted up old cops. Yeah. That's, you know, I for you people in your 20s and 30s, when you're out doing something, and somebody says, someday you're going to feel that. I'm someday. And boy, do I feel every fight I was ever in, every bike patrol thing I ever did. But you know what? When I look at all that, I think, oh, yeah, all the aches and pains and stuff. But I also had a 29-year amazing adventure as a police officer that I wouldn't give up for anything. Yeah. Again, getting back on track, do not miss the opportunity to take care of your own health. And as first responders, there's a real good chance that when you're on the job and when you retire, you probably have pretty decent insurance. Mm-hmm. Take advantage of that. Get every diagnostic test that's available to you. Because if there is anything happening, catching it early is the key to beating it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, Betsy, you mentioned your faith and Christianity. How did your prayer, do you think your prayer life helped you from emotional and spiritual health, spiritual wellness component, not just in your career, but through this time of healing from cancer?
Oh, absolutely. I'm fortunate enough that I was raised as a Christian. I was raised in a family of great faith, and that helped me throughout my law enforcement career. Cause I went into some situations where I was, not real sure I was going to come out. You know, I spent 4 years on an undercover task force and where things were very dicey. I've been into other very dicey situations. I was a hostage negotiator, things like that. I was in a couple of bad crashes. And my faith really helped me to control that fear. I always knew that if I did die in the line of duty, I felt really bad for my family, but I knew where I was going. And that helped take care of some of that fear. So I make it through those 29 years pretty healthy and in one piece. But then when you get that cancer diagnosis, and understand that my mom died at age 55 of cancer. So when I got that diagnosis, that is a real gut punch. But again, I'm fortunate. I have a good church family here. My husband shares my faith, as do our kids. One of my best friends sent me, a little cross talisman kind of thing that it's my give it up to God cross, where you just at night, because when you lay down at night, when you are fighting cancer and you know, that you have lots of conversations with lots of different medical professionals, and then you go redo your will and get all that stuff in order. But when you lay down at night, whew, you know, it's hard to sleep because you've got so much on your mind. Being able to give that all up to God and know that I really wasn't in control was a source of just unbelievable strength and comfort. I really don't know how anyone fights or survives a disease or a tragedy or a trauma without a faith system. And frankly, this is something we don't proselytize in our law enforcement classes, but one of the things we talk a great deal about is that belief system. Do you believe in something bigger than you, or do you think this is it? Because as a first responder, and especially as a police officer, you've got to have that sense of mission and you got to have a belief system, because otherwise you're not going to deal well with all the trauma and the tragedy you see. Yeah. So yes, my faith has just been just absolutely at the top of the list of how my husband and I and our family were able to deal with this with a great deal of positivity. I've got so many people are like, oh, you must be so sad, depressed. Like, no, you know, I'm kind of hoping my hair grows pretty soon. But other than that, you know, I'm good to go. I am very grateful for the support. I'm grateful I live in an area and have great insurance where I get the best care by some of the best people. And, you know, but faith is at the top of that list. God's taking care of all this for me. And boy, am I grateful.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Well, Betsy, we're running up on our time here. I would like to ask you, is there anything that I did not ask you that you were hoping that I would, or anything you'd like to spend more time on?
Well, I'll tell you, something that we're really passionate about right now when we talk about our physical and mental well-being as first responders is, you know, is our suicide rate. You know, police officers die twice as often by our own hand as we do by felonious assault. And our dispatchers are prone to that as well as our firefighters and EMS. Yep. You know, we just had a horrible situation in California where we had a firefighter shoot two fellow firefighters, killing one. You know, the stress is real. Yeah. The post-traumatic stress is real.
And he went, killed himself, right?
Yes. And then he committed suicide.
Yeah.
So it's real. Don't wait until you are so overwhelmed with stress and grief and your life is falling apart around you. And understand that there are so many places that you can go to. There are great hotlines out there like Safe Call Now, great peer support organizations like Warriors Rest, great organizations for retired law enforcement who, you know, are struggling like the Wounded Blue. Don't wait to get help until it becomes critical. And know that, you know, if you're a first responder struggling with your mental health, you're not alone. So many of us do. Don't wait to get help because there are resources out there. Make sure that you are getting some help. And I one of the first things we like to do is talk about peer support and speaking to each other, helping each other.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I want to get your take on something, because when you're talking about that, and I'm with you, and I'm, you know, I'm out on LinkedIn quite a bit with a lot of law enforcement as well as firefighters. And, you know, from smash the stigma to see something, say something, you know, all of that type of thing. But I want to share with you a statement from an evaluation from my work-life balance workshop I just conducted last week, from one of the law enforcement officers. It says, Dr. Donnie's workshop should be a mandatory class for all Arizona agencies. It was a wake up to reality class.
Absolutely.
And here's what I say, Betsy. It's almost a cry for help, crying for others. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm facing, you might have some experience on this, and I'd like to get your advice, is that when I mean, my class, one, it doesn't sound tough and it sure doesn't sound sexy. It's called work-life balance transformation. It's not, hey, let's go shoot this new AR rifle.
Right.
People flock to it, right? When it's voluntary, it's, you know, people are, and the law enforcement officers tell me, the ones that do show up, it's like, people think they're weak if they show up to this. I go to another place, like I was at the end of April, and I have to always pat Yuma Police Department on the back, because they're training coordinator, and it all comes down probably from the chief as well. But Ruth Hernandez, it was so organized. Six classes, two per day. Mandatory, you know, she said, we voluntold them to be there.
Yeah, I love that, voluntold.
And what it was, I would start each class and I would say, how many of you are here voluntarily? One or two people. They had to be here. All their hands go up. How many? And leave your hand up if you want to be here. They go down. But I'll tell you that at the end of the class, they're giving me a hug. And they're giving me things like, you make me want to be a better father, a better husband. I mean, it's part of that. And what I'm seeing, I'm experiencing this myself right now, is that I'm seeing is that they need help as well as firefighters, but you're in the industry to where asking for help is the lowest strength of most first responders.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to ask for the help, but if we keep, and I think we see this too and I'm sort of ranting, I guess, a little bit on this, but it's like, we see it too, is that there's this 800 number here and there's this agency here. And there's, you know, if you feel too stressed, call this, call that. But I think, and I want to get your feedback on this, is that I think we need to do a better job of telling others that, no, you are getting help now.
Well, that comes from two things, leadership and culture. And, you know, when I started in law enforcement, they told us in the academy, you know, don't take this stuff home. Keep it to yourself, you know, this and that. And you know, so we're seeing a bit of a culture shift. But what we see as we travel around the country is it like you said, you know, that agency has got to make it a priority. That comes from our leadership, the chiefs and sheriffs.
Yeah.
Have got to say, look, the mental health and the physical well-being, and they go together, of my personnel are a priority, and we've got to make it a priority. And of course, you know, we're right now, you know, the trend in training is implicit bias and de-escalation and this and that. You know, but the thing is, if you don't have mentally and physically healthy personnel, and again, this isn't just the cops. We've got to look at our dispatchers and our civilian personnel as well. We have got to make that a priority. And in this age of defunding, we have got to put some of our refunding back into mental and physical well-being for our personnel. Cops and leadership needs to understand the cops who are mentally and physically fit are going to make better decisions on the street or on that 911 line than they are if they're exhausted and overweight and negative and all that. So it's going to take a culture shift, and that's got to come from the top.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah. Just like most organizations, right? It's all
but
about,
you know what?
About leadership.
Our first responders have also got to be vocal and advocate for themselves as well. And the unions, the police unions out there, you know, it can't just be about that 4% raise. We've got to look at physical and mental well-being as well.
Yeah. Cause that's where I sort of see where I fit in, is that I really try to shore up people's family life and their health and wellness. And I feel like if you shore that stuff up, you're going to be more resilient and more successful in your job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're saying the same thing. It's like, you know, we got to focus on that physical health. It's just like preventive maintenance that you do on all of your equipment, your vehicles, everything.
Yep.
We need to do that, make sure and lead and make sure we do that on our people.
Yes.
Well, before I let you go, I started doing this just a couple episodes ago. You mentioned your daughter, right? And your husband, but you want to them, throughout your career, you mentioned how your daughter, you know, she read to you going to sleep and things like that. And she told you that she was proud of you and all of that. If she would happen to listen to this episode, what would you like to say to her?
She is absolutely the light of my life. She is such a successful adult. You know, she lives in the city of Chicago and deals with all of that and remains true to her Christian conservative principles in all that she does. And so she is just such an incredible joy to me. And I have 3 stepkids and 4 grandkids. And we're, you know, I would just say to all of them how much we appreciate now seeing them as adults live the lives that we always hoped that they would. It's an extraordinary honor as a parent to be able to look at those adults now and say, wow, you know, apparently we did some things right. And they continue on. Just making us proud and bringing us joy. And they're just all 4 of them are just fun people to hang out with. And we're really proud of all of them.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Well, to close this out, first, what I'd like to do, I want to thank you very much. I'm absolutely honored that you came on as a guest. So thank you very much. And also, I wanted to see if you would, I always like to toss over to my guest, if you would like to close out this podcast with a blessing to all first responders and listeners out there.
Absolutely. And I want all of our first responders to know, and our military personnel as well, because we're a military family, that we pray for you every night. We pray for your health and your stamina and your leadership. And we are so blessed to live in a nation that has been kept free by our military. And then we are allowed to exercise our freedoms thanks to our law enforcement and our first responders. And we pray for and love each and every one of you. It's a difficult job that you do. And we see all around the country our first responders doing amazing work. And we're just we are bursting with pride, my husband Dave and I, when we see all the amazing work we do, the amazing work that they do. And we're seeing so many young people still continue to come to these professions. And we love you and pray for your health and safety every single day.
Amen. Thank you very much, Betsy.
Thanks for having me. It was a ball.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balance program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.